tape was expensive, so people would re-record over tape because you can reuse reel-to-reels a lot by re-recording. And with tape, mostly. Anyways, so what Lee Scratch Perry would do, and also King Tubby was one of the early pioneers. We're going to hear from him later.
Mm-hmm.
They would take these tracks and kind of add stuff on top or, like, combine two different recordings and... They kind of inadvertently invented remixing.
That's right. And it's so weird that it was accidental, just more out of a hobby. But here we have an entire industry, really, of music being made from two guys who were just having fun and playing with these tape samples lying around. Again, Dave schooled me. I keep mispronouncing the name of the show. I keep saying it's Funky Reggae Party. And it's got a little bit of funk, but it's really a punky reggae party named after the famous song by Bob Marley, who we will be talking about in a bit.
And you came up with the name for this theme.
I am a blissful fool. But with that said, maybe the reason I keep saying funky is because of the title of the record we have to talk about next, Funky Kingston.
Yes, by Toots and Maytals. Of course, fronted by Toots Hibbert. And a lot more attention has been paid to him in the last... Well, honestly, really, since...
Since his passing, really.
Yes, but there was a resurgence, obviously, in the late 70s when the Clash covered Pressure Drop. Or was it early 80s?
I think it was the late 70s, yeah. And then even just before his death, even just a year or two, I believe, Toots and the Maytals released another record, which was fantastic. A really great record.
Yeah, and then he passed. I think we even... played one of the songs or a few, but this album Funky Kingston is always being returned to, and as we mentioned earlier, there was a version in 75 that was rearranged with the track listing, and it included Pressure Drop, probably due to,
I think it's an inclusion in the soundtrack The Harder They Come.
Yes,
so it was kind of a marketing tie-in for that. A great song regardless, but I don't think the 75 American issue recaptures that original 73 sound. That record was issued in the UK and Jamaica on Dragon Records, which was a subsidiary of Blackwell's Island Records, of course referring to Chris Blackwell, who we'll be talking about in just a moment. But yeah, this record is fantastic with these lyrics that just talk about the difficulties of being working class, living in Jamaica. And we did talk about the influence of soul and R&B in reggae. And you really hear that on that track.
Oh, yeah. And I think there's even a cover of Louie Louie on there done in a reggae style. But they definitely had that rock influence in their sound, for sure. And I can see why some punk bands might gravitate towards the music they made. Mm-hmm. Because they had that little bit of an edge there to their music, which was a little different from the other reggae artists of the time.
That's right. Very hard-hitting. And then before that, we're talking about an artist who released not one, not five, but two records in 1973. I'm talking about Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Yes, originally known as the Wailers, they started going by Bob Marley and the Wailers. Once they got a new contract, they were kind of pushing for Bob Marley to become a star, which would happen, and which would cause conflict within the band members and cause several of the Wailers to leave the group shortly after this time period.
In fact, after the release of the album Burning, which we did hear a track called Burning and Lootin' from, a very kind of slow apocalyptic number, this was released in October of 73, and it contains some of the Wailers' most popular and biggest songs, including I Shot the Sheriff, Get Up, Stand Up, and it was the last album to feature the Wailers as a group, featuring not only Bob Marley, but Peter Tosh, as well as Bunny Wailer, who all decided to pursue solo careers, and Bob Marley would take the name of the Wailers and continue on with it, even though really he was pursuing a solo career. This album itself was mixed by Island Records founder Chris Blackwell in his Basing Street Studios, and it features a lot of re-recorded songs that the band had previously recorded with Lee Perry back in the early 70s.
Yeah, this album and Catch a Fire were recorded roughly around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it came from a lot of different sessions. So what happened was, as they were signing to Island Records, they were coming off of a tour and they weren't able to get home. So they were forwarded in advance that I believe Chris Blackwell thought they would just come to London and record their album, but they took the money, went home, and recorded all this stuff themselves, which is pretty great. And then what happened was Bob Marley wound up going to the UK and with the master tapes and kind of doing some reworkings for Catch a Fire with Chris Blackwell in hopes of, you know, gaining a new international audience. And it did work.
It certainly worked. I mean, this was a huge album and definitely one of the most important in Bob Marley and the Wailers' discography. You know, I think it's in no small favor, of course, to the musicality and great guitar work of Wayne Perkins, who would be better known as a session guitarist for the Muscle Shoals Band.
Yeah.
Now, Perkins was brought in possibly to give more of a European or American-centered sound to it with some of that guitar work that we heard on that opening track, Concrete Jungle, from Catch a Fire. Regardless, though, it's incendiary guitar work. It's burning. It really, you know, is appropriate for the title of the record.
Yeah.
But it's just such a great searing line of guitar work underlying with these original recordings done by the Wailers. And those original Jamaican recordings were not to see the light of day for a few years. Later on in the episode, we're actually going to play one of those original tracks, unedited, the original Jamaican recordings. But with that said, we've been talking a lot. We want to get to some new music, and we're going to be highlighting some hidden gems from Canada, four incredible reggae releases, all from our fair country. So we're going to get to it, starting with Earth, Roots, and Water from their 1977 album Innocent Youths with the track Zion. You're listening to Punky Reggae Party 2 here on Revolution Rock.
Can't reach over Zion. See that Yeah. money. They rob and they steal from your great granddaddy. They pile up the slaves with their gun and a whip. They pile up the slaves with their gun and a whip. They steal and they lied and they cheated, yeah. Slave money gave them their riches. Slave money gave them their riches. They steal and they lied and they cheated, yeah. Chains on your feet, heavy load on your head. Pain in your body till you drop dead.
Tribe of Judah.
Listening to Revolution Rock here on CJAM 99.1. And I'm your host, Dave, joined with Adam. We're here for theme month, celebrating Black History Month, doing what we're calling Punky Reggae Party 2, playing a bunch of reggae and obscure reggae, and also some other music from black artists that would go on to be very influential. And in that last set, we featured a set of Canadian reggae artists, a lot of which were part of a Toronto reggae scene in the 70s and 80s,
mm-hmm.
And pretty well known. Originally from Kingston, they went to Toronto, and then they recorded there and lived there and became part of the scene.
Yeah, really interesting history for a lot of these guys, which we'll get into. That last track in particular has a very interesting history. That was by Noel Ellis. Now, Ellis was the son of a very famous reggae singer called Alton Ellis. And he was born in Kingston, Jamaica, but as a teenager, he relocated to Toronto, and he started working at Summer Records, which was run by Jerry Brown. During the course of that time, he basically was convinced to do some recordings. So in 1979, he cut this track and a number of other ones to Haile Selassie. And that was featured on Noel Ellis's debut and sole record from 1983, a self-titled record.